CBSI in the World. I'm John Batchelor with Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. Nigeria, the important election in all of Africa this calendar year within these next days. The news is an investigation of corruption in the army right on the eve of the election. Gregory, does this favor any particular candidate? The investigation is getting a lot of media in Nigeria.
Well, it's getting some attention in the media, but there's no shock, no horror about this. My God, there's corruption in the armed forces. That has been going on under President Buhari, the current president of Nigeria, who's a former military leader of Nigeria as well. The corruption in the armed forces has been profound. It was also profound under President Goodluck Jonathan before him. Really, this has been coming to a head for a long time. It will be a factor, but the whole cause of the corruption will be addressed not by the APC's follow-on candidate, former Governor Tinubu from Lagos State, because he's complicit in the corruption himself. This is a guy who did a plea deal with the United States Department of Justice and paid us something like $450,000 to escape prosecution in a narcotics-rigging case when he lived in the United States. So he's really profoundly disadvantaged, shall we say, in that. And what we're seeing is not that this military corruption probe is coming to the fore, because that's something designed to make the present corrupt government look as though it's doing something about it. It's really leading to the whole collapse of the campaign by Governor Tinubu to be the next president. He was the front runner. He is now taking on water faster than the Titanic. This gives an enormous impetus to the third-party regional candidate, Peter Obi, the Labour Party candidate, who really doesn't have the national chops to make it, because he can't command the required 25% minimum vote in enough states to push him over the line. It's not enough to just get a total majority of votes. You have to get them, these votes, distributed around a significant number of states. And he can't at this stage do that. But it's now a battle to see where the people might go if they flee from supporting Tinubu and go to support his main opponent, Atiku Abubakar, or whether some of the votes go to Peter Obi. So right now it's going to be an interesting election. This is the first time we've seen a real election influenced by third-party candidates. Then there are two strong candidates, apart from the two leaders, and that's including Peter Obi, and it's former Senator Kwankwaro from Kano up in the northwest. So they're both sort of bleeding votes away from Atiku and Tinubu. So it's going to be very interesting. It's going to get down to the wire. I would still see that it's possible to see Atiku elected on the first round of the ballots on February 25th. Failing that, I think we'll have a period when there will be a shaking out between Atiku and if he's facing Obi. But then they'll start talking about substance, and Obi just doesn't have the experience to handle things on a national scale.
Quickly to Ethiopia. The civil war is ended, but there looks to be a conflict, a schism in the Orthodox Church involving the Oromos. Can you do this in 3 minutes, Gregory? How significant is it?
It's very significant, and it deserves more than 3 minutes. Basically, the Oromo Liberation Front has been pushing the Oromo-led national government of Prime Minister Abiy to favor the Oromo in many respects. And now we had three archbishops of the Ethiopian Orthodox Church, who were these three archbishops were of a Romo ethnicity. They split away and uncanonically created or consecrated 26 monks as bishops, and these were Romo monks, to create a new Orthodox synod for the Oromia regional state. So basically they're trying to create a new church out of the Orthodox Church, because the campaign by the Oromo Liberation Front, which is essentially a Marxist group, to destroy the Orthodox Church has failed. So now they're saying, okay, well, we'll split the Orthodox Church, which is a national church, and basically was one of the key things holding the country together. And so we'll pursue our separatist claims by creating a new church and achieving autocephaly there. In other words, making an independent Orthodox church. That is not going well. It's now led to a massive reaction by Oromos and others against this. And there have been a lot of deaths and in various parts of the country. And as a result, there's going to be a major protest movement over the coming few days throughout Ethiopia in support of the national Ethiopian Orthodox Tewahedo Church, and that's one of the biggest Orthodox churches in the world. So it's got over 50 million adherents. So this is going to be quite interesting.
Gregory, does this delay the rebuilding after the civil war and the negotiations with the TPLF?
Well, the TPLF negotiations are over. The TPLF has been disarmed of all major heavy weapons. They still haven't disarmed them from their light weapons. So that's still a problem. The TPLF, however, apart from still enjoying support from the State Department to some degree, is not capable of responding. However, we're not seeing the move toward a harmonious country. The Egyptians are still supporting the Oromo Liberation Front, for example, which is less than helpful, you could argue. So it's two steps forward, one step backwards, and the Prime Minister has yet to come down in favour of supporting the National Orthodox Church, because he's Oromo. He's actually half Oromo, but he is now claiming to be all Oromo. And he is Pentecostal and not Orthodox. So there's some suggestion that he also feels competitive with the Ethiopian Orthodox Church. He wants to be the unchallenged leader and savior of Ethiopia, and he wants it to be Oromo-led.
In our final seconds, can this lead to violence, or are we talking about a theological dispute?
Oh, no. It's already led to violence. Many dozens killed already in the last few days.
Gregory Copley, editor and publisher, Defense and Foreign Affairs. We're headed to Australia and the Indo-Pacific. I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
We all make choices. When it comes to alcohol, kids make choices whether to drink or not.
Bye, Dad.
Bye-bye.
Remember, I'm going to Alex's party tonight and sleeping over.
Hey, Em, have a seat for a second. Remind me about that party again.
Alex is just...
And adults make choices whether to talk about it. That's true of parents and every other trusted adult in a kid's life. Kids want to know our expectations when it comes to alcohol and other drugs. They want guidance and honest answers to their questions. And it makes a difference when the message is consistent and part of everyday conversations. So talk with your kids and help lead them on a positive path. Because when you talk, they hear you. For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.